Broadcasting from the Prime Meridian Bank Studios in the capital city of Tallahassee, this is Front Row Knowles with Tom Block and Keith Jones. Front Row Knowles is brought to you by Hobson Chevrolet of Cairo, Georgia. Get your best deal the Hobson way.
Welcome to Front Row Knowles. Tom Block and Keith Jones with you. KJ, how are you, sir?
I am wonderful because I'm old school, which means anytime you beat the Gators is a good day.
Although, let's just be candid, as we get into our latter stages here, KJ, and we normally record the show more in the early bird hour, we're having to stay up very late on a Tuesday evening after the culmination of that win in Gainesville to put this one in the can, so to speak.
Well, it's okay. I took a nap, so I'm good.
We're going to have Bob Ferrante, our Osceola insider, join us. We'll break down the baseball game in detail, which we haven't done in a while. But 15-0 is 15-0. I don't care who you've been playing. I mean, baseball is a sport where, you know, pitcher's going to miss the strike zone. Hitters are going to struggle. And so far, and this is not to say Florida State's going to win the whole thing, it appears to be a much improved baseball team, though, right now, Keith, from what we've seen in the last couple of years.
Certainly improved, and quite a remarkable job by Link with two new coaches. 26 new players, counting the transfers and the freshmen. Certainly a different makeup in this squad. They can hit. They can throw hard. They're not seasoned. They've got a lot of maturing to do, but they've got a lot of talent, rough talent, and it's certainly easier to work with rough talent than working with no talent.
Question. So Bob will join us and we'll break down that game. He's been I've actually been to a decent amount of the home games, but he's with what he does, he's seen them and talked to Link an awful lot. So we'll get his impressions. Keith will also talk a little college football. I don't know if there's anything you'd like to start with here in light of where we're headed, which is just uneven revenue distribution for the, you know, the rich are just getting richer, basically, is what's going on.
You know, we talked, what, 2-3 years ago about conference realignment and teams, you know, moving from this to that. Now we're talking about guaranteed spots in the CFP. We're talking about unequal distribution of revenue. I mean, has there ever been another 2 or 3 year period of time when the game of college football has been so rapidly changing? I don't think so.
There hasn't been, and I'm just curious. I mean, we're Florida State guys, Keith. It doesn't feel like the pendulum of public perception is going to change at any point on Florida State, even though it's becoming more and more apparent every day when you read a story about how much more money the SEC and the Big Ten is going to get, why FSU is involved in litigation, because they want to move and they want to be a have, not a have not. And yet Florida State is just getting treated as if they're the issue with the sport that frankly has – an awful lot of issues, as we have discussed for years.
There was an expression when technology first started being an issue in business. And the phrase was that you wanted to be on the leading edge of technology. You did not want to be on the bleeding edge of technology. And right, wrong, or indifferent. And I think 5-10 years from now, we're going to look back and say, you know, while it was uncomfortable, and while it was difficult, Florida State did what it needed to do when it needed to do it, when nobody else would. And I think if, and I believe they will, but I'll put the if in there, FSU successfully negotiates the departure from the ACC in whatever fashion that is, you're going to see multiple teams jump on that train very, very quickly.
I agree, and that's where we're heading. All right, we'll take a break. We'll talk baseball, then we'll do a little FSU potpourri. We'll mix some football in there. There's some spring practice news. All that is straight ahead. Stay with us here on Front Row Knowles.
Front Row Knowles is presented by Hobson Chevrolet of Cairo, Georgia. Get your best deal the Hobson way. Now back to Tom and Keith.
Welcome back to Front Row Knowles. Tom Block, Keith Jones, and our Osceola insider Bob Ferrante joins us as we open up that Earl Bacon Agency hotline, the Earl Bacon Agency, ensuring your future together. Bob, I mentioned to you before I hit record, we're going to do something we haven't done in a while, and that is spend a whole segment talking about FSU baseball. But that was one win a quarter of the way into the regular season. But nevertheless, for a lot of the questions that we've had about Florida State, they certainly provided answers in a good way on Tuesday night at Florida with a 12-8 win.
I think we were waiting for this type of game, you know, on the road, a ranked opponent, a rival. What did Florida State look like? And yes, it didn't look pretty in moments, right? I mean, you don't have a true starter out there. You're kind of trying to get 27 outs a bit of the hard way. I think Link Jarrett mentioned it during the game that Andrew Armstrong could be a starter for them. He could be a midweek guy. Maybe that's going to be an interesting storyline to watch, because we've often seen him in a relief role or these kind of short opener type roles. But the bats getting it done, you know, Florida State hadn't scored 10 runs down in Gainesville since 2007. It's been a long, long time to see that kind of number on the scoreboard. So it's, despite some of those errors, whether they show up in the scorebook or not, I think this is a win to be celebrated for the program for sure.
So, Bob, Florida State remains one of only two unbeatens. Texas A&M is the other one. How about this? Florida faces FSU on Tuesday night, and then they get Texas A&M for a series. That's a little unusual. Florida's dominated this over the last few years. What might this mean? We won't know till a year, two, three from now if Florida State gets on a roll, but what might this mean for the psyche of this program?
Yeah, I think it can be far-reaching. From a recruiting standpoint, it has to help, because in a lot of regards, Florida could always hang this over various Florida State coaches through the years. You know, Florida takes care of business against rivals, so on, right? From a player confidence standpoint, this is pretty significant. I think when you – yes, this is a different roster compared to last year, and Link has tried to – not make, say, big picture judgments about this team just yet. But if you watch them, they are a different roster from last year, but they are far more confident than last year. They are doing the right things to win ball games. This only has to help. That bus ride back from Gainesville had to have been pretty entertaining late into the night, them enjoying this one. I don't think we should just say it was just one game. It was just one night. It's a pretty huge confidence building night, especially now that you can say going into ACC play against Notre Dame and just see how they can parlay it.
Let's stay big picture, and then we can dive into some of the heroes from the win over Florida. I wrote down three or four takeaways, and they were evident in the game Tuesday, and they may be just characteristics of this team. And Bob and Keith, jump in on any of them. First of all, they weren't intimidated. You get out to a 7-0 lead there, and then you let Florida right back in at 7-5, and it was kind of – it looked like it might be teetering, but yet FSU got through an inning or so, and they were the next team to score, and that kind of removed doubt, it felt like. The lineup is productive 1-9, and we've known that. We'll expound on that. I thought it was noticeable that there was – this team – it does a better job running the bases. I mean, they took an extra base a couple times, and that's noticeable. And then the other thing, and this is a far cry from when I called the games on radio, which I guess it's a long time ago now. My first year was 2007, by the way, the last time they put up this many runs down in Gainesville, Bob. Every time they go to the pen, the next guy they bring in is throwing mid-90s or 96, and that is so different than what it was for FSU 10 or 15 years ago. Not for college baseball, but for FSU, that is different. And so those are just kind of four broad observations. Agree, disagree? Did that jump out to either of you guys?
Agree. I would add in there, it seems like last year a lot of times I was asking a Link about the lack of coming through with a runner in scoring position. They were 6 of 16 Tuesday night runners in scoring position. That's 375. That's a big number to me. Yes, to your point about pitching, I think it's still kind of early for a lot of these pitchers because there's so many new faces, right? It's a freshman like Rowan who just throws crazy stuff. And I think some of these guys may not exactly have that control. And there's a little bit of that wildness that we're going to have to just see how it plays out. Like Brady Lauk, I believe, is a guy coming off Tommy John surgery a while back in high school, a freshman. who's in these big pressure freshman moments on the road in Gainesville, of all places, with without having maybe much of a high school senior year, right? So, and we have to think about how this looks to the 18, 19-year-old, and then how it looks to the transfer who's 15 games into a career. How it looks maybe isn't pretty, isn't what we would want to see, but I think we have to maybe appreciate these are some of the early steps individually and some of the early steps collectively for a program too.
Tommy, you talk about the base running. If my number is correct, y'all can double check me, fact check me, as they say. This Seminole team is 26 of 27 in stolen bases. The only player that's been caught stealing is the catcher, who's not supposed to be able to run at all. And he still has a successful stolen base. He's just the only one that's been caught. That's pretty remarkable.
And is that more stolen base? I'd have to go back and look. Is that more stolen bases than last year? I mean, it feels like this is a much better running team already. And yes, we can put up the asterisk against somewhat inferior Northern non-conference schools, but there's speed out there. There's the aggression to take the extra base, but not get caught in a bad situation of, hey, I think I got it. I think I can get it. It's consistent at an incredibly high rate. And heck, we even saw what Jackson West bunted, I think, tonight, thinking he was going to advance the runners, and he even, you know, reaches first. We're seeing speed from the catcher. What is exactly going on here? I don't know, but it feels like a lineup 1 through 9 that puts pressure on the pitchers from that type of speed.
Yeah, Bob, you and I were talking about the lineup going 1 to 9 when I popped in the box. I guess it was that Friday night.
Yeah,
at Hauser, and it was pretty much almost everybody in the lineup had a hit last night. Tibbs had the 3-run homer, but really, if you look at the box score, it was the bottom 4 or 5 guys in the lineup that did the heavy lifting, starting with Faroe, and Cantu had a huge game, and so that speaks volumes. If you're the opposition and you don't get any breaks, even though it's the 6, 7, 8 hitters coming up for the opponent, if everybody's a tough out, you're going to keep scoring 7 runs a game, which they've done every game this year.
Yeah, it's been really consistent. Maybe not the same guy every night, but somebody has been the big bat. And obviously, you look at the batting averages. I mean, can Cam Smith keep up 485? Probably not, but it's been pretty impressive. Tibbs at 387, Jaime's at 310. It's been really good. Lodis was a 9 hitter a lot of these nights. And he said, I think Friday night, I love being the 9 hitter. I'm just going to see heaters all night. I'm just going to see fastball. So it's fun for him because he gets to see the pitch that he knows that's coming. And if he hits it, he's going to make hard contact, get on base, and flip it over to the top of the lineup. I think it's just after a lot of years of, well, we think 1 through 4, 1 through 5, they might be good. But after that, boy, I don't know. All of a sudden, they just made a huge jump from 1 through 5 to 1 through 9. Looks pretty impressive.
Bob, they've settled in on the Friday and Saturday starter, and Link said during the ballgame who Sunday would be. Are you confident that this starting rotation, this weekend rotation, can hold their own and improve? They got a tremendous amount of strikeouts, which, by the way, as everybody knows, also helps with your fielding percentage. They're not putting the ball in play. But what do you think about the starting weekend starters?
I think, for example, Cam Leiter, he's very wild, but he's got that Friday night stuff that, man, when he hit 98 Friday night on that strikeout to start the game, I thought, wow. I mean, that kind of stuff is just crazy good for the college level. And yes, they've got some opportunities with Cam Leiter setting the table on a Friday night. You turn around, Jamie Arnold going left-handed on a Saturday. We all know what Connor Whitaker can do in many different roles for this team. I think I really like him in that Sunday role, although there is part of me that says, hey, there are some significant midweek games where you might want to have a Connor Whitaker against Florida a couple times. But I do understand the philosophy of you've got to win your ACC games. You've got to win those ACC series. And in theory, that might be what gets you this is really skipping ahead. That may get you what to the point where you can host a regional or be in a better position to host a regional because you have this type of pitching staff, because you could potentially win two out of three or maybe even sweep some guys. I don't want to get too far ahead in terms of the optimism, but those are three really good experienced pitchers that just give you a chance to win a lot of games, a lot of series.
Not quite to the same level, but it wouldn't be Florida FSU if we didn't have a little controversy. And in the eighth inning, as Florida's mounting a rally with their best player on deck, if you didn't watch the game, guy had two strikes on him, and they rung him up because he leaned into a pitch. And it was one of those – I thought somewhere it was like, here we go, it's Lane Fender all over again. We're going to argue, did he lean in or did he not? But that's what makes rivalries fun, right, KJ?
Well, I will tell you that they did go to review, which is a reviewable play. And they didn't come back and say the play stands as called. They said it was confirmed as call. I was watching the game. I saw it in real time. I thought it was the right call. And then when they started running all the replays, I'm going, hey, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. But they did uphold it. And they did ring him up. And FSU benefited from it.
And I have to say, we're in the box.
Turn overnight.
Yeah, when you're in the box and it's coming in at 90+. I think your intuition is to lean in as if you're going to swing, but in a hurry, if that ball looks like it's coming right at you, you are twisting every which way to get away from the ball. So for me watching at home, I kind of see it now. I'm squirming along with the batter. The call did go Florida State's way, even though it may not have happened the way anybody in Gainesville wanted it.
Never apologize for a win, gentlemen, as we have discussed many times. I'll finish on this note. Again, it's a quarter of the regular season, right? A little more than a quarter. They're 15-0. So that's the best start since a guy named Jameis Winston was on the team in 2013. And it's the most runs they've scored against Florida since a guy named Buster Posey was on the team in 2008. So if nothing else, I mean, that's not coincidental. It must mean the team's got a little something to it through 15 games, don't we think?
Yeah,
I
think
you more again, than nod your head. This is radio, Bob.
I feel like the optimism and the hype train will only build off of this because it's Florida, because it's, I don't want to say it's a national TV game, it's SEC Network and all, but it's that kind of game where a lot of, say, voters are going to be watching it and taking a lot out of those nine innings, what they saw from Florida State, what they saw from Florida. But honestly, there's been a lot of Twitter discussion over D1 baseball not ranking Florida State. Was it over the strength of the schedule? Was it over just, hey, in the preseason, Florida State wasn't ranked, so they had to do more to be ranked in the eyes of the D1 baseball voters? I think that's the kind of game that just catches a lot of attention, and you start to project what this team can do over that stretch. I think the hype train is definitely starting, though, coming off that kind of win.
Gang, the most enjoyable part of the game for me is the first time that Micah Posey came out to the mound, and both announcers, KP and the other guy, fumbled all over themselves to remind viewers that he wasn't related to Buster. It was a different Posey.
The other guy, by the way, was Dave Neal, who's a Florida State alum, Keith, and who used to work at Channel 27 right before I got there back in the Stone Ages.
When I apologize.
We had just moved from black and white to color TV.
I apologize. I should have known that, but I did not. Forgive me.
There we go. All right, we'll take a break. Come back. We'll open it up. Go ahead, Bob.
I have to hat tip. Micah is the son of a legend. Mike Posey being a legend at NFC for more than 30 years winning state titles. So it's a different type of legend, I guess.
There you go.
If he was smart, he negotiated with Alford in his contract that he gets paid extra every time somebody asks him in an interview if he's related to Buster Posey. Because that contract would have doubled already, how many times he's probably been asked that. All right, We'll go to break. We'll come back with more Front Row Knowles right after this.
Be sure to subscribe to the Front Row Knowles podcast and follow at Front Row Knowles on Twitter. Now back to at underscore Tom Block and Twitterless Keith Jones. Yes, you heard us right, in the Prime Meridian Bank Studios.
Back on Front Row Knowles, we keep open that Earl Bacon AC hotline. All right, guys, for a change, we didn't start with lawsuit talk, FSU versus ACC, CFP and where that's going. I saved it all the way here for segment three. But since last we convened, the Big Ten and SEC have basically decided that they're going to treat the rest of college football sort of like Major League Baseball players treat the clubhouse guy. After the game, they're just going to pull the money, pass the hat, and they're going to tip whoever they just beat from whatever league they were playing and go from there. I mean, what's the disparity up to now? Like, the playoff is like 51% to the SEC and Big Ten and 31% to the ACC or something crazy like that?
I don't know. It's kind of stunned me in some regard that the SEC and the Big Ten felt like they could even ask for more guaranteed seats at the table with this whole – you know, concept of, well, we will get this many seats in the playoff moving forward. Well, can we let the games on Saturdays start to decide that? I mean, what are we doing? There just seems to be, I think, a power shifting arrogance among some of these athletic directors and commissioners. And there was a headline, I think Yahoo, one of the writers mentioned, is this the end? Is this particular moment the end? And it never really is, right? It never is the end, but it just kind of feels like these offseason talking points of that power struggle that certain conferences want to take on.
Gang, did we think even 2 years ago, certainly not 5 years ago, that we'd be looking at the Big Ten and the SEC with 20 teams or 22 teams, either of those conferences or both of them with four divisions, not two, but four divisions? You know, I don't know. I'm not in the room. I'm not a player in that realm. It's beyond my pay grade. But that guaranteed spot, I think, was a bargaining chip and a leverage. I think Tom is right on where they really want to be. The most important thing is that revenue split, because they know they're going to be represented at the table even without the guarantees, at least short term. So if they can negotiate that differential revenue split, that's what they're really after, in my opinion.
I think then the question becomes, what does ESPN and Fox do? Like, how does ESPN and Fox placate to their favored conferences, right?
Well, for those who aren't keeping up, this is on top of the regular TV contract for the regular season games. This is additional revenue being split unequally from the new playoff contract. So you're looking at a 30 to 40 million to 50 million over the next 10 or 15 years divide on the regular season contract. And now we're talking about an extra 15 or 20 million per school on the postseason. So it's getting out of hand. And this is why FSU was preemptive and is trying to get out of the ACC. I will say, you know, the question comes up a lot about, you know, like, why is Vanderbilt, why do they still have a seat at the table? What about Purdue and Indiana? The reality is the Globetrotters needed the Washington Generals, right? I mean, you got to have somebody in there that's going to go 2-10. Otherwise, the entire league is going to be 6-6, which that's what you get in the NFL, is an awful lot of parity. It'll just feel weird in college football if the playoff winds up getting to that stage, because all the good schools are playing each other, and now your best 12 teams are all coming in 8-4, 7-5.
Yeah, but Tommy, the key there is, though, if you're one of 40 as opposed to one of 80, you don't mind every now and then when you're 6-6, because you're still at the table. And I think the whole concept of a super conference or two super conferences, I really haven't made my mind up about how fearful I am of it. I just know that there's a very, very, very real possibility that's what you end up with.
I do not want to defend the ACC, but I will ask, because Jim Phillips has been paying for the alliance, right, which fell on its head, and we would have had an expanded playoff last year and all that. But if you're the ACC and the Big 12 right now, like, what do? You're playing poker, and you've got nothing, and you're playing against teams that have got, you know, they're looking at a full house over on the other side of the table. I mean, do you say yes? Do you fight for 1% more? Do you keep arguing against the buy? Do you just say whatever? I mean, what do you do?
I honestly, I think the ACC is out of moves. Like, I don't think there is. You can negotiate. You can try to say we're the ACC and we have Florida State and Clemson. We have two of the biggest brands outside of the SEC and the Big Ten. That's good. The problem is the view of Florida State's wins over a lot of teams in the ACC feel like they beat a bunch of Vanderbilts to a lot of people looking at the ACC from a distance. I think that's the optics of how a lot of ACC programs are viewed is just not very good. It's unfortunate. Sometimes it's real, and sometimes it's just the view from five or six states away, in my opinion.
More than anything else, I'm fearful. Not that it's not good for Florida State, but I'm just fearful because I don't know what the fallout's going to be. But as I said prior, it's not going to surprise me if ESPN declines their option in the ACC contract for 2027 going forward to 2036. I think the ACC will just pull it. They're not making money. They're not profitable. They'll just pull it, let the ACC reconfigure at a lower level, let Clemson and FSU and whoever else make their changes, and then see what the chips are, see what falls.
Certainly, if the lawsuit resolves in FSU's favor between now and decision day, and Florida State's going to be out of the league, it feels like ESPN would definitely do that. I mean, they're already getting a bargain rate on the ACC deal, but they can walk away and come back and get even a better bargain rate for the same mediocre football. So I don't disagree with you. All right, I got nothing else on the college football front there, except that we got, bringing it to FSU, we got the spring football practice schedule. You know, we're pining for football when it's an exciting release from Derek that says, okay, FSU is going to practice on Tuesday and Thursday, and there's some Saturday scrimmages you can't come to, and then it all culminates with the spring football game. But it does mean that real actual pigskins are going to be in the air, Bob, and it's tangible when you see that release.
I think it's fun to know that every, Tuesday, Thursday, and then most of the Saturdays coming up for the next month, we're going to be able to watch these guys. And there's so many new faces. It's not just the early enrollees. It's the transfers, too. And, you know, we can't just pick one position group either. I think we always say, well, we're curious about quarterback. Well, yes, but it's also, hey, which wide receiver is going to emerge? Is there a second tight end to complement Kyle Morlock? Is there depth at defensive tackle? Linebackers, which of the young linebackers are we going to see kind of take charge? Hey, there's a lot of good talent at DB, as always. How do they separate themselves? It just feels like at every position group, there's something entertaining to watch. And that's what's really good. I'd love to be a fly on the wall at the scrimmages and to be able to see, you know, some of those battles in the trenches, I think are really something that maybe the media misses out on. You know, not seeing the O-line versus D-line, whether it's one versus one or one versus two, but, or two versus two, I guess, too. But it's really going to be an interesting month just to kind of see, okay, what was the expectation? What was the thought about, hey, Florida State landed this guy and it changes the room? How? But then in the spring, you really get to kind of see that unfold firsthand and how they mesh with their teammates.
I've never paid as much attention as I should because I simply don't know about offensive line and defensive line. But I will tell you, people in the know will mention that the best measure of a football team is board drills in the spring and see what the competition looks like between the OL and the DL. That's always been a defining point, a measuring point as to who's doing what. It's just football at its basic.
I think we've got a good opportunity too with these transfers. And we've got some second year transfers like a Jeremiah Byers. You know, what step does he take as a potential offensive tackle starter? What do we see from a Marvin Jones or a Sion Lolohia? I mean, there's just a lot of some newer guys and some second year transfers that, I mean, they're going to shape how this team performs in 2024.
The caveat, Bob, is always that if the defensive end looks awesome, you start worrying about the offensive tackle. And if the receiver is all world, all of a sudden you're wondering what's going on with the corners. So you just have to keep that. Remember a few years ago, we thought the receivers were terrific or I don't even remember. We thought that the DBs were terrific. And then we found out the receivers weren't very good is what it was. I think that was when Travis Jay jumped out like his first year, right? All right, let's do seminal potpourri here, Bob. So the FSU women won a couple games, made it to the ACC tournament semifinals. Selection Sunday, their show is coming up Sunday at 8. So this team of Brooke Wyckoff with Taniya Latson's leading them, averaging 21 points a game. They are a Sweet 16 team. If they get hot, Elite 8 team. What do you think?
I hate to just say it depends on the matchups and how the bracket unfolds. It feels like a team that's been powered by their big four. You know, Sarah Bajetti's been struggling, been very streaky down the stretch. But I think what's great about Florida State is you've got the inside out. You know, you've got Taniya Latson, you've got Omariah Gordon, you've got Michaela Timpson, who basically is going to average a double-double. I think she averaged right at a double-double in the regular season, plus the ACC tournament. So can they make it to the Sweet 16? Yes. But if you're sent off to – if you get a bad matchup, I mean, if you're a 7 seed and you're sent off to play somewhere – and again, these are not neutral site games. These are at a, say, a 2 seed. That's tough. That's tough to win on the road in that arena. I think that's just where I'm kind of held up on them maybe not making it out of a second round.
All right, Bob, on the men's side, the team which finishes one game above 500. They're playing in the 8-9 game. Virginia Tech, if memory serves, on right at the time we're airing locally. They have to win the tournament to get in?
100%. They've got to defend the 3 if they want to win some ball games. I think it starts with Virginia Tech because they love to drill the 3s from deep. I don't have a lot of optimism for Florida State being able to make a run because it would have to cross 4 straight days, right? Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday to make a run. I had held out hope that NIT would be a possibility for this team about a month or so ago. And I just don't see it consistently. Coach Hamilton's mentioned that, you know, what they do consistently is be inconsistent. Outside of Jameer Watkins, this team is really up and down. It's been a great year for Jameer. I think he's one of the gems of college basketball. You know, being able to score 15 points in whatever it was, 7 or 8 games in a row, I think, and double digits in all but one ACC game. I mean, Jameer has had a really, really good year. It's just not been enough to kind of will this team forward. It unfortunately just feels like it's been dysfunctional too often. And that's tough to see. We don't want to see it, but I think that's just the reality of their year.
I'll offer this without comment. The consistency has come from Coral Gables, where Miami managed to lose its last 10 games of the season and had it end on Tuesday after going to the Final Four a year ago. So that was including a loss again to Florida State last week in the final home game. All right, on the softball diamond, the Noles swept the doubleheader on Tuesday, but they get back a big test again against Alabama on Wednesday night. So we'll see. You know, it's funny, we talk about FSU as if they've fallen off a cliff. They're 17-5. They just need a little bit more consistency from their pitching, and all of a sudden we're talking about them as World Series contenders again is what it feels like. I guess the question is, can they make, you know, can they get that kind of growth and take that step?
I think that's what Lonnie Alameda is looking for. Again, she puts young pitchers in these pressure situations to see what they're ready for in mid-March, April, May, and into the postseason. Again, that's why it doesn't look so great early in the year. We're still kind of waiting to see McKenna Reed. Can she take on that number one role? Doesn't need to be workhorse in terms of eating so many innings, but can she be that alpha pitcher to sort of set the tone? Life after Kat Standercock has been really, really difficult, obviously. I think we felt like it would be. I think this could be a big week for just showing what Florida State can be. Playing Alabama in a nice ACC-SEC game on a Wednesday night. Then you face Duke, I think a top 15 team. So that could be a big Friday, Saturday, Sunday series too for Florida State.
All right, fellas, which one of you has already put in the call to Brian Burns asking for a loan?
That's a lot of money. I mean, good for him. That's great.
A huge amount of money.
Happy for Brian. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, good for Brian. I caught up with him. He was he did an event the day before the LSU game in Orlando. I don't even know that he stayed for the game. He might have had to be back with Carolina then, but good for him. Good for him. Bob, two more. I had to look this up because candidly, I didn't know, but beach volleyball, as per usual, is ranked in the top 5. They're number 4. They're unbeaten. Last time they started, they're 13 or 14-0. Last time they did that, they made the I think they were tournament runners up, NCAA runners up. But they go to California this week, and that schedule reads like number one, number four, number seven, number eight. I mean, it's UCLA, Hawaii, Cal, Loyola Marymount. So we'll find out what they're made of, I guess, as they go to Manhattan Beach.
Again, a very good program that just goes well below the radar because everybody's playing and playing pretty well in March. But yeah, it's and that's the age old storyline, I think, too, with beach volleyball is can you beat those West Coast teams? What does it look like when you get down to Gulf Shores, you know, in the end of the postseason? Are they able to compete with those on multiple matches in the same day, right? And then to try and win a title eventually.
And lastly, congratulations are in order for Trey Jones, and he's got, I guess, a sophomore star in the making that won the Seminole Intercollegiate. The team finished second, but Luke Clayton, 15-foot birdie putt to win it on 18. And I looked it up, Bob. He's finished in the top 10 in five of his last six tournaments. So is he the next Trey Jones star in the making? Or I'm probably leaving somebody else out that's an upperclassman right now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Gray Albright won that tournament over in Watersound earlier in the year, and he won the Seminole Intercollegiate, you know, last March. So it seems like Trey Jones is just bringing in and recruiting at a very high level. It feels like a deep team. It feels like a team that's going to be able to make some noise once they get into the regional play for sure.
We will wrap it up on that, Bob. Appreciate you flexing your muscle and expertise in a variety of disciplines tonight. Thanks, as always, for joining us on Front Row Noles.
Take care. Thanks.
All right, we'll have more right after this.
Be sure to subscribe to the Front Row Noles podcast and follow at Front Row Noles on Twitter. Now back to at underscore Tom Block and Twitterless Keith Jones. Yes, you heard us right, in the Prime Meridian Bank Studios.
On Front Row Noles, just a few minutes ago as we wrap things up, always appreciate the insight from Bob Ferrante. Did you notice, by the way, that he had a good answer for everything I threw at him there? I had to do copious research to be on top of my beach volleyball and golf game, and he's just throwing the stats right back at us. It's almost like this is what he does for a living, Keith.
And did you notice how little I had to contribute for those sports, unfortunately?
I wasn't going to point that out, but you did so right now. It is a busy time. It is a it's a good. I'm excited about baseball because, again, I have to put the asterisk there. Right? It's 15 games. But there used to be a rockin' fun time when Florida State is going well, and if Florida State starts getting a little momentum here, fans will come back. And that's not to say there's not fans there. There's a good crowd there. But you know what I'm talking about in terms of getting raucous, intimidating. Loud and proud, so to speak. It'd be good to see some of that come back.
Without question. And as we mentioned during the previous segment, Florida State, only one of only two remaining unbeatens in the Division One level of baseball. And I'm just happy for Link. I'm happy for the coaching staff. I'm happy for the kids. Obviously, last year was not enjoyable by any stretch of the imagination. And to get back on winning ways, as they talk about, and you know, get excited about this team, I think energizes everybody.
All right, let's go back to the topic that you brought up. Brian Burns, what did he get? 5 years, 150 mil? Is that what we're looking at here?
Now, I want to say
guaranteed.
I want to say 145, but it may be 150. But yeah, it's plus or minus 30 a year.
76 fully guaranteed. I'm seeing somewhere. I haven't dived into it. Somewhere between 76 and 87 is guaranteed. So, Keith, what is your first purchase after you have signed your William Keith Jones on a contract that guarantees you $87 million, even if you never play a down?
I don't know, Tommy. I mean, I have actually never sat down and fantasized about that. The only actual story that I have about signing bonuses and guaranteed money involves Derek Brooks when he signed his first contract after his rookie contract. And I've said it before on the show, people may remember, but he was playing in a celebrity golf tournament at Seminole Golf Club, as it was known then, and was playing with Decker Hall. And at the turn, he politely excused himself and he went to the bank and he did a balance inquiry and just printed out that little white piece of paper because he wanted to make sure that his signing bonus had actually hit his checking account. And then he came back, caught up with who he was playing golf with, and finished up the last six holes. I don't know. I honestly don't know. I've not been around that much money, that kind of money. It's beyond my thought process.
Mine as well. Hopefully Derek bought the beers on the rest of the holes there on the course after getting confirmation that the signing bonus was in.
I just think it's hilarious that, A, he checked it by balance inquiry at a drive-up ATM, and B, came back and finished what he was going to do at the Celebrity Golf Tournament.
All right, speaking of finishing, we're out of time. Folks, always appreciate you tuning in. We do this each and every Wednesday. And until next Wednesday, Keith, have a good one. Folks, thanks again. This is Front Row Knowles.